Good afternoon, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier. It's Friday, January 29th, and I'm your reader, Bob Young. Today, The Courier is forecasting times of clouds and sun, with winds from the south-southeast between 8 and 16 miles per hour, with a high of 27 degrees today, a low tonight of 23 degrees, with skies becoming cloudy, and wind from the southeast between 10 and 20 miles per hour. As we look around the region, times of clouds and sun today, becoming cloudy tonight, periods of snow tomorrow and tomorrow night, difficult travel with snow-packed roads, Sunday, snow ending, storm total is between 8 and 12 inches. Looking at our top stories on the front page, seniors begin to get vaccine appointments, virus variant reported in U.S., vote to cut epidemiologist funding under legal review, and we begin with in-person school edict okayed. Required in-person education option headed to governor, filed by Aaron Murphy. Des Moines. Legislation requiring K-12 schools to offer all students a 100% in-person learning gained final approval from Republican majorities in the Iowa Capitol on Thursday, sending the measure to Governor Kim Reynolds' desk. Reynolds said she will sign the bill in a tweet Thursday night. Republicans, including Reynolds, support the proposal, saying students and families should have the option of being in the classroom full-time during the COVID-19 pandemic, even in districts where local school and public health officials have not deemed that to be safe. Democrats oppose the measure, saying local school leaders, not state lawmakers, know best how to keep staff and students safe. Quote, "There's so many benefits from our kids being in school," said Senator Brad Zahn, Republican of Urbandale, listing concerns about students falling behind in their education, possible mental health issues for isolated students, and at-risk students not being at school and under the supervision of mandatory reporters. Democrats argued everyone agrees students should be in classrooms, but it should be handled safely and at the discretion of local leaders. Quote, "Is there a single person in Iowa that believes kids should not be in school right now? Do you know of anyone who thinks that? But forcing kids back in the middle of an uncontrolled global pandemic is dangerous," said Senator Joe Blokum, Democrat from Iowa City. Some schools have operated either entirely online or by using a hybrid model in which students are in classroom some days and learn virtually other days. The proposed legislation requires districts to permit any students who wish to attend school in person every day. Quote, "We are hurting our kids by not allowing them the option to be in school," Zahn said. "We have to get these kids back in class." During debate on proposal in the Senate, Democrats read correspondence from school administrators, nurses, and teachers who suggested the measure could put school staff and students in danger. Quote, "We want kids back in school, but we want it done safely. It's not being done safely now, and this bill would make it worse," said Senator Rob Hogg, a Democrat from Cedar Rapids. The legislation, Senate File 160, passed the Senate on a party-line vote with 29 Republicans supporting and 18 Democrats opposing. Later Thursday, Iowa House passed the measure on a mostly party-line 59-39 vote, with Wes Breckinridge, a Democrat from Newton, joining Republicans in support. That sends the bill to Reynolds. On Thursday evening, the Senate approved Reynolds' sweeping plan to use public funds for private school tuition for students in struggling public schools, expand the state's charter school program, and eliminate diversity programs that prevent students from open enrollment out of districts. The legislation passed with only Republican support, and three Republicans, Don Driscoll of Williamsburg, Tom Shipley of Nottoway, and Annette Sweeney of Haldon, joined Democrats in opposition. Republicans who supported the legislation argued it will provide more options for students who are struggling in public schools to seek educational opportunities at private schools. The legislation only makes scholarships available to students in schools receiving assistance under a federal program that identifies schools in need of, quote, comprehensive support and improvement, unquote. Quote, these children are being failed by cracks in our system, and this is my attempt to stand in the gap on their behalf, unquote, said Senator Amy Sinclair, a Republican from Allerton. Democrats argued taxpayer funding should be focused on the state's public education system and that lawmakers should explore ways to help struggling school districts, not create new public funding mechanisms for private schools. Quote, our public schools are not failing. We are quitting on them with this bill. It's a quitter's bill. We're moving on to the new shiny object, said Senator Liz Mathis, a Democrat from Hiawatha. The bill, Senate File 159, advances to the Republican-controlled House. Speaker Pat Grassley, Republican of New Hartford, said Friday that House Republicans do not plan to advance the bill immediately, but also said their pause should not be interpreted as a lack of support. Seniors begin to get vaccine appointments. Waterloo area health providers to start calling people 65 and older for COVID-19 vaccines, filed by Sydney Sison. And it begins with a photograph of Blackhawk County Health Department Director Nafisa Sisi Eboigne as she speaks behind a podium and in front of an American flag and a large computer monitor. Waterloo. Healthcare systems will start calling patients 65 and older this week to schedule COVID-19 vaccine appointments, County Health Department Director Nafisa Sisi Eboigne announced on Thursday. Blackhawk County will give 700 of its expected 800 incoming doses next week to people 65 and older, Eboigne said. The total population of residents 65 and older who need to be vaccinated is about 20,000. Eboigne advised residents against calling healthcare systems themselves or walking into clinics to request COVID-19 vaccines. Quote, only a small amount of the vaccine is available at this time, and you may not be contacted right away. So we ask people, please remain patient, Eboigne said. The county is working with Mercy One, Unity Point, People's Community Health Clinic, and independent health clinics to give the vaccines, Eboigne said. People 65 and older without a primary health care provider can contact the health department to arrange for their vaccination, Eboigne said. The phone number is area code 319-292-2360. The state's recommendations for the next priority group to get the vaccine originally included people 75 and older. Governor Kim Reynolds soon after announced the state would lower the age threshold to 65. The new recommendations fall in line with federal guidance. There will be no preference given to people with pre-existing conditions, Eboigne said previously. She said getting medical documents about conditions would complicate the process. People with the first priority group who did not get vaccinated yet, including healthcare workers, nursing home staff and residents, pharmacists, and environmental services workers, can contact the health department to arrange for their vaccines. The health department plans to provide an option on its website starting next week that allows people to be sent COVID-19 vaccine updates. Eboigne said the health department will post a form on its website for businesses to request vaccinations for essential workers. The form can also be used by people who were part of the first priority group but did not get vaccinated. Aside from people 65 and older, the state recommended some essential workers get vaccinated in the next group. This includes first responders, K-12 school staff, childcare workers, manufacturing employees in congregate settings, people with disabilities in home settings, home care staff, people living in congregate settings, health and safety inspectors, correctional officers, and inmates. The essential workers in these groups are classified in tiers in order of priority. Quote, working through phase 1B will require a large number of vaccines, Eboigne said. It will take time. Congregate settings include independent living facilities and homeless shelters, said Joshua Picora, County Disease Surveillance and Investigation Manager. Students living in college dorms are not included. Eboigne said this is because young people have lower death rates than older people who get COVID-19. The health department said it plans to split its future vaccine allocations in half between essential workers and people 65 and older. This approach is included in state recommendations. Quote, due to the shortage, not everyone who is eligible will be able to get the vaccine immediately, Ibornie said. Pharmacies will mostly handle vaccinations for essential workers, and healthcare systems will take the lead on vaccinating the older population. More than 10,700 vaccines have been allocated to Black Hawk County as of Thursday, Ibornie said. The health department website says more than 2,300 people have received both doses of COVID-19 vaccine, which requires two doses a few weeks apart. Ibornie told Board of Health members Wednesday that the shortage of vaccines from state and federal officials did not cause any local residents to miss their second doses of the vaccine. Quote, we all know the past 10 months have been difficult, very difficult, Ibornie said. But with the release and distribution of COVID-19 vaccine, we are now able to slow and eventually stop the spread of COVID-19, unquote. Legal review underway for Black Hawk County Supervisor's decision to cut epidemiologist funds. Stories filed by Sydney Sizon. And opens up with a photograph with the caption, Health Department Director Nafisa Sisti Ibornie speaks on January 20, 2021, to the Black Hawk County Supervisors and Board of Health members. Waterloo. The Board of Supervisors' decision Tuesday to cut Health Department funds for an epidemiologist position is under legal review. Supervisors voted 3-2 to eliminate nearly $99,000 in funds for the position, a medical professional who studies disease and works to prevent them. Mike Treenan, an assistant attorney for Black Hawk County, told the Board of Health on Wednesday he is researching the legality of the motion approved by the supervisors. Treenan said he should have a proposal about whether to clarify the motion by the end of Friday. At least one supervisor must approve to add it to Tuesday's agenda. Different people are drawing different conclusions. There's a couple of ways of looking at it, Treenan said. Quote, and I think that may warrant some clarification. Supervisor Tom Little made the motion to cut the funds for next fiscal year. Dan Trelka and Craig White voted in favor. Supervisors Linda Leyland and Chris Swartz voted against defunding the role. Quote, I would make a motion to eliminate that staff position and or the funding for that position, Little said Tuesday. Swartz said he did not believe the Board of Supervisors had the authority to eliminate positions. Quote, we sure do, Mr. Swartz, Little replied. Quote, but if you heard my motion, it was either the staff and or the funding, which we certainly have the right to take funding. So that was part of my motion, unquote. The Iowa Supreme Court decided in a 2002 case filed by the Warren County Board of Health that employment decisions are the responsibility of health boards, not supervisors. The responsibility is outlined in Iowa law, which states that local boards of health are responsible to, quote, employ persons as necessary for the efficient discharge of its duties, unquote. The Supreme Court's decision said that the power to employ includes the power not to employ, unquote. Quote, that essentially stands for the proposition that the employment of personnel within the health department, the authority to do that is vested in the Board of Health. It is not vested in the Board of Supervisors, Treenan said. Quote, there may be some disagreement about that, but I think the law is pretty clear, unquote. Treenan said the and or phrase included in Supervisor Little's motion may have caused confusion. He said any clarification to be made would not be a criticism of the Board of Supervisors, unquote. Quote, when you make a motion during a proceeding that you haven't had a chance to write out and look at how the language may be interpreted, some stuff like this happens, and there are always ways we can fix it, Treenan said. The Reverend Mary Robinson, chair of the Black Hawk County Health Board, cited Wednesday a 2003 report that outlines rules for local health boards. The department states that the Board of Health is an autonomous when it comes to personnel. It utilizes reasoning from the 2002 Supreme Court case. Quote, there needs to be clarification about that particular motion, Robinson said. Quote, it was an and/or motion in the language, and that is clearly unclear, unquote. Robinson said she hopes a future joint meeting between the Board of Health and Board of Supervisors can clarify the responsibilities of each. The two boards had a January 20th joint meeting about budget proposals, and Troika said another joint meeting is tentatively planned for March. Health Board member Adam Royce said he hopes to clarify Board of Health intentions about its budgeted funds. Little previously criticized the health department's spending on items that were not specifically outlined in the budget. Quote, on our end, it gets a little bit complicated, and it impacts the morale of the department, Health Department Director Nafisa Sisi-Ebonye said. Quote, I'm going to do some rounds after our meeting just to check in with staff that the headlines and what staff hears about. You can imagine it puts everybody on edge in regards to their position and what that means, unquote. Treenan said he does not think the clarification will be controversial. Quote, I'm not beating anybody over the head with what board has what authority, Treenan said. The clarification that I envision here is that the motion that should be made and be voted upon would simply address the budget proposal, and by that I mean the budget amount, not eliminating or changing any of the staffing, unquote. Virus variant reported in U.S. Stories filed by the Associated Press. Columbia, South Carolina. A new variant of the coronavirus emerged Thursday in the United States, posing yet another public health challenge in a country already losing more than 3,000 people to COVID-19 every day. The mutated version of the virus, first identified in South Africa, was found in two cases in South Carolina. Public health officials said it's almost certain that there are more infections that have not been identified yet. They are also concerned that this version spreads more easily and that vaccines could be less effective against it. The two cases were discovered in adults in different regions of the state and do not appear to be connected. Neither of the people infected has traveled recently, the South Carolina Department of Health and Environmental Control said on Thursday. Quote, that's frightening, because it means there could be more undetected cases within the state, said Dr. Krutika Kapali, an infectious disease physician at the Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston. Quote, it's probably more widespread, unquote. Meanwhile, Novavax Inc. said Thursday that its COVID-19 vaccine appears 89% effective based on early findings from a British study that it also seems to work, though not as well, against the new mutated versions of the virus circulating in that country and South Africa. The announcement comes amid worry about whether a variety of vaccines being rolled out around the world will be strong enough to protect against the worrisome new variants, and as the world desperately needs new types of shots to boost scarce supplies. The study of 15,000 people in Britain is still underway, but an interim analysis found 62 participants so far have been diagnosed with COVID-19, only 6 of them in the group that got the vaccine, and the rest who received the placebo shots. The infections occurred at a time when Britain was experiencing a jump in COVID-19 caused by a more contagious variant. A preliminary analysis found over half of the trial participants who become infected had the mutated version. The numbers are very small, but Novavax said they suggest the vaccine is nearly 96% effective against the older coronavirus and nearly 86% effective against the new variant. The findings are based on cases that occurred at least a week after the second dose. The arrival of the variant in South Carolina shows, quote, the fight against this deadly virus is far from over, Dr. Brannon Traxler, the state's interim public health director, said in a statement. Quote, while more COVID-19 vaccines are on the way, supplies are still limited. Every one of us must recommit to the fight by recognizing that we are all on the front lines now. We are all in this together, unquote. Viruses constantly mutate, and coronavirus variants are circulating around the globe, but scientists are primarily concerned with the emergence of three that researchers believe may spread more easily. As the variants bring a potential for greater infection risks in the U.S., pandemic-weary lawmakers in several states are pushing back against mask mandates, business closures, and other protective restrictions ordered by governors. States including Arizona, Michigan, Ohio, Maryland, Kentucky, and Indiana are weighing proposals to limit their governor's abilities to impose emergency restrictions. Wisconsin's Republican-controlled assembly had been expected to vote to repeal Democrat Governor Tony Evers' mask mandate, but lawmakers abruptly called off the vote Thursday in the face of broad criticism and out of concern it would jeopardize more than $49 million in federal aid. Pennsylvania lawmakers are considering a constitutional amendment to strip the governor of many of his emergency powers. Governors argue that they need authority to act swiftly in a crisis, and limitations could slow critical emergency responses. In another development, Democratic lawmakers are urging federal health officials to address racial disparity in vaccine access nationwide, as data from some states show hard-hit non-white Americans who are eligible to receive it are not getting COVID-19 vaccines in proportion to their share of the population. In a letter Thursday to Acting Health and Human Services Secretary Norris Cochran IV, the lawmakers said the agency must work with states, municipalities, and private labs to collect and publish demographic data of vaccine recipients. Without that information, policymakers and health workers cannot efficiently identify vaccine disparities in the hardest-hit communities, said the letter, signed by Representative Ayanna Pressley and Senators Elizabeth Warren and Edward Markey, all from Massachusetts. It is critical that the Black, Latinx, Indigenous, and immigrant communities that have been most impacted by this virus and have been more likely to contract, be hospitalized, and die from the disease, have access to the vaccine, said the letter, first shared with the Associated Press. Also, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's administration confirmed Thursday that thousands more nursing home residents died of COVID-19 than the state's official tallies have previously acknowledged, dealing a potential blow to his image as a pandemic hero. Music and Memories. Maddie Popey, HCC alum, to perform free virtual concert on February 4th. The article is filed by Amy Rivers and opens with a photograph of Maddie Popey. Waterloo. An American Idol winner who got her start at Hawkeye Community College will put on a concert especially for community college students and their families next week. Maddie Popey, who won the National Reality Singing Competition show in 2018, will perform a free virtual concert at 7 p.m. Thursday, February 4th. The link to the concert can be found on Facebook by searching in events for Maddie Popey. But the best way might be following Hawkeye Community College's Facebook page, which, along with Iowa's 14 other community colleges, is funding the free concert. The link will be posted just before the concert is set to begin. Quote, "It was a collaborative project, and Maddie was chosen because she's a homegrown Iowa girl and she attended community colleges," said Mary Pat Moore, Executive Director of Public Relations and Marketing at Hawkeye. The singer-songwriter will perform songs and talk about her experiences, according to the event page, though Moore did not have details on what that would include. Poppy's concert will be available to the general public, Moore said, though the concert is geared toward the community college demographic in particular. Poppy, who majored in digital mass media while attending Hawkeye, returned to Waterloo in 2019 to make a music video for her song, Not Losing You, with help from HCC students on the production side. quote, "We're extremely excited to have her perform for us," Moore said. "We're proud of her as an alumnus. She has chosen a path and been very successful," unquote. A committee of Waterloo residents to help examine city-owned broadband services, filed by Sydney Sizon, Waterloo. A committee of residents will be appointed to help with Waterloo's quest to explore a municipal broadband utility. The Telecommunications Utility Board of Trustees voted unanimously Wednesday to establish the committee. It will include 3 to 5 members to provide input about city-owned high-speed internet, phone services, and cable television. Members will be appointed by Board Chairman Andy Van Fleet and confirmed by the board. Residents will help in 4 areas: risk mitigation, community marketing, digital infrastructure, and finance and business strategy. He called the areas, quote, "critical pillars to move this project forward successfully when the time is right to turn the plan into actionable items," unquote. Quote, "This is such a monumental project that we could be, as a group, benefit from having additional minds thinking through some of the best ways to proceed with this," Van Fleet said. Members will serve as long as deemed necessary by the board. "Meetings will be open to the public as required by Iowa law," Van Fleet said. Van Fleet already has some names in mind, but said he is open to recommendations. The Telecommunications Board is reviewing a broadband study from consultant Magellan Advisors, commissioned more than a year ago by the city for $110,000. The city has declined to release the study to the Courier. Van Fleet previously said the study will be publicly released and brought to the City Council for approval in May or June. Michelle Widener, Waterloo's Chief Financial Officer, said Wednesday the city is including some money for initial broadband costs in the next fiscal year's capital improvement budget. She did not provide details. Councilwoman Sharon Wan, a liaison to the board, asked whether the council will get a presentation about the budget requests. Widener said that's up to the City Council members. Van Fleet said the board is waiting on Magellan to finalize the draft study before February 15th. It will then be reviewed by board members, and there will be a presentation about it at the February 24th board meeting, Van Fleet said. The updated study will include aspects of Mayor Quentin Hart's plans for a smart city, Van Fleet said. This includes technology to help agencies and officials collect data about city systems, improve communication, and enhance interconnectedness. Quote, "They've been a really great partner to work with," Van Fleet said of Magellan Advisors. "They've done a great job of thinking through the best approach for what we're trying to accomplish here in Waterloo." You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Friday, January 29th. On IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Hudson Everett Williams, 71, of Waterloo, died Tuesday, January 26, 2021, at Unity Point Health Allen Hospital. He was born June 5, 1949, in Waterloo, son of Ansel and Bessie Hudson Williams. Hudson attended Waterloo East High School. He married Sandy Kingery January 15, 1968. They later divorced. He married Pamela Neidert November 1979, and they later divorced. Then he married Kimberly Wolf August 20, 1999, in Waterloo. He worked on various jobs in Waterloo over the years and retired from Allen College after several years as a maintenance worker. Hudson enjoyed slow-pitch softball, golf, bowling, and stock car races. He could often be found at the softball diamonds or bowling alley. He also loved classic cars. He was never shy about giving advice. His family is what meant the most to him, survived by his wife Kim, 6 children, Paula, Reginald, Chad Williams, Andrea, Chase, Dana Williams, Corey Williams, Alexis Williams, and Tyler Williams, 3 stepsons, Aaron, spouse Nicole Westfall, Brent, spouse Amy Westfall, and Chad Wolf, all of Waterloo, many grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and 2 siblings, Jimmy and Susan. preceded by his parents and sister, Dixie Cronin. Services, 1 o'clock p.m., February 1st, at Lock Funeral Home. Visitation, 1 to 3 o'clock p.m., January 31st, 2021, at the funeral home. Memorials may be directed to the family. Visit www.lockfuneralhome.com for more information. Mary Jones, 83, daughter of Joe and Gracie, maiden name Cyberling, Bearer, was born October 29, 1937, in Mitchellville, Iowa. She passed away Wednesday, January 27, 2021, at Glen Oaks Alzheimer's Special Care Center in Urbandale. Mary grew up and attended school in Voorhees, Rhinebeck area, and graduated from Rhinebeck High School in 1955. She went on to attend Iowa State Teachers College in Cedar Falls for 2 years. Mary married Jim Jones on April 26, 1958. They made their home in the Linden, Panora area, where she was a homemaker and a wonderful mom to Julie, Teresa, and Jackie. In the early 1970s, she attended Drake University during the summer to obtain her teaching degree, and she graduated in 1973. For the next 24 years, she touched many lives in the Panora-Linden School District, first as a second-grade teacher and ending her career as a kindergarten teacher. Mary was an active member in the Panora community. You could find her volunteering at the Panora Library, 3Cs, Panora Care Center, or at WSO service events. She was also a very active member of the St. Cecilia Church. Mary and Jim were also very involved in the Panorama School District, attending many athletic events, concerts, drama events, and so on. Mary was named Citizen of the Year in 1993. After retirement, Mary and Jim were frequently seen riding around town and on the bike trail on their tandem recumbent bikes. They also took many bus trips visiting all 50 states and also Scotland, Ireland, and Canada. Going to Iowa State football and basketball games was also another retirement activity. Funeral services will be 10 a.m. Saturday, January 30th, 2021, at St. Cecilia Catholic Church, Panora. Burial will be in St. John's Catholic Cemetery, Ogden. Visitation will be Friday, January 29th, 2021, from 4 to 7 p.m., with a prayer service at 7 o'clock p.m. at the Twig Funeral Home, Panora. Masks and social distancing are required. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions can be directed to 3Cs, Panora Library, Panorama Boosters, or St. Cecilia Catholic Church. Fayette, Helen Elizabeth, maiden name Lockwood, Scheidel, passed away peacefully on January 27, 2021, at the age of 96, in the company of her 5 children. Helen will always be remembered for the love she had for her family, her singing and dancing, as a dedicated teacher. Helen enjoyed the incredible career doing what she loved, teaching children to read. She taught kindergarten, first grade, and special education during her 35-year career in the Fayette and Albany school systems. Helen also had a passion for sharing her faith and volunteered extensively at the St. Francis of Assisi Church as secretist, religious education teacher, and Eucharistic minister, as well as at Maple Crest Nursing Home and Assisted Living. She was also an active member of Delta Kappa Gamma, Phi Delta Kappa, Church Women United, American Association of University Women, Catholic Daughters, treasurer of Fayette Family Food Co-op, member of City of Fayette Public Utilities Board, and the Retired Teachers Association, in addition to being an accomplished seamstress who used her gift to make her family's clothing, quilts, and blankets. Helen was born on September 27, 1924, in Valentine, Nebraska, and moved to Fayette, Iowa in 1936 and remained in the area as a resident for the rest of her life. Helen graduated from Upper Iowa University with a BA and went on to secure a master's degree in both remedial and developmental reading from the University of Northern Iowa. Her family would like to thank the caregivers and staff at Maple Crest Living Facility for their care and compassion. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be sent to Maple Crest Living Facilities Activities Fund in Fayette, Iowa, 52142, or the St. Croix Hospice, 101 Elkader Street, Strawberry Point, Iowa, 52076. Catholic Mass will be 10 o'clock a.m. on Saturday, January 30th, 2021, at the St. Francis of Assisi Church in Fayette, Iowa. There will also be a 9 o'clock a.m. visitation and a 9:30 a.m. rosary. The service will be live-streamed via the Becker, Milnes, and Redig Facebook. Becker, Milnes, and Redig Funeral Home, Sumner, Iowa. Phone number 563-578-3451. Joseph Joe Martin, 78, of Lansing, Iowa, formerly of Waterloo, died Monday, January 25, 2021, at Veterans Memorial Hospital in Waukon. Joe was born July 29, 1942, in Waterloo, son of Harold and Harriet, maiden name Clark, Martin. Joe graduated from West High School in 1960 and then served in the U.S. Army during Vietnam. Joe married Terry Smith in 1987 in East Moline, Illinois. He worked for John Deere for 33 and a half years, the last 17 years as a committee man for the UAW Local 838. He was active in the UAW and Waterloo AMFETS Post 19. Services will be held 3 o'clock p.m. Saturday, January 30th, 2021, at Locke Funeral Home, with visitation from 1 o'clock p.m. until the service. A private burial will take place at a later date at Waterloo Memorial Park Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the family. Condolences may be left at www.lockfuneralhome.com. Vinton, Jean Berry, 89, passed away peacefully Monday, January 25, 2021, at Ravenwood Specialty Care Center in Waterloo. Funeral services will be noon Wednesday, February 3, 2021, at Van Steenhuis Russell Funeral Home in Vinton. Visitation will be from 10 to 11:30 on Wednesday at the funeral home. Burial will be in Garrison Cemetery. Military rites will be performed at the funeral home by the Iowa Military Funeral Honors Guard. Jean Allen Berry was born July 12, 1931, in Fort Wayne, Indiana, the son of Clarence and Gwendola Kopp Berry. Jean grew up and attended school in Fort Wayne, Indiana. From 1948 to 1953, during the Korean conflict, Jean served his country in the United States Navy. On May 3, 1952, he married Lenora Simmons in Atlantic City, New Jersey. He received his BBA degree from Southeastern Bible College in Birmingham, Alabama, his MA from Adams State College in Atlanta, Georgia, and his Master's of Divinity from the Dubuque Theological Seminary in Dubuque, Iowa. Jean's calling to the ministry guided him and his family to many congregations in many locations. He also served as a hospital chaplain and a guidance counselor during his career. Jean's passion was collecting rocks, minerals, fossils, and other specimens of God's creation. Van Steenhuis Russell Funeral Home is caring for Jean and his family. Condolences may be left at www.vsrfh.com. Turning now to a few articles on this page. Tyson, groundbreaking award-winning actor, dead at 96. Filed by the Associated Press, and it opens with a photograph of actor Cicely Tyson, New York. Cicely Tyson, the pioneering black actor who gained an Oscar nomination for her role as the sharecropper's wife in Sounder, won a Tony Award in 2013 at age 88 and touched TV viewers' hearts in the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman, and she died Thursday at the age of 96. Tyson's death was announced by her family via her manager Larry Thompson, who did not immediately provide additional details. Quote, "With heavy heart, the family of Miss Cicely Tyson announces her peaceful transition this afternoon. At this time, please allow the family their privacy," the statement said. A one-time model, she began her screen career with bit parts, but gained fame in the early 1970s when black women were finally starting to get starring roles. Tyson refused to take parts simply for the paycheck. Quote, "I'm very selective, as I've been my whole life about what I do. Unfortunately, I'm not the kind of person who works only for money. It has to have some real substance for me to do it," she told the Associated Press in 2013. Tributes from Broadway and Hollywood poured in, including from Tracy Thomas, who thanked her for paving the way. Quote, "A queen and a trailblazer indeed," she wrote on Twitter. Director Kenny Leon added, "God bless the greatest and the tallest tree." Besides her Oscar nomination, she won 2 Emmys for playing the 110-year-old former slave in the 1974 television drama, The Autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman. A new generation of moviegoers saw her in the 2011 hit The Help. In 2018, she was given an honorary Oscar statuette at the annual Governor's Award. Quote, "I come from lowly status. I grew up in an area that was called the slums at the time," Tyson said. Quote, "I still cannot imagine that I have met with presidents, kings, queens. How did I get here? I marvel at it," unquote. Sounder, based on the William H. Hunter novel, was the film that confirmed her stardom in 1972. Tyson was cast as the Depression-era wife of a sharecropper, Paul Winfield, who is confined in jail for stealing a piece of meat for his family. She is forced to care for their children and attend to the crops. The New York Times reviewer wrote, "She passes all her easy beauty by to give us, at long last, some sense of the profound beauty of millions of black women," unquote. Her performance earned an Academy Award nomination for Best Actress. In an interview on the Turner Classic Movies cable channel, she recalled that she had been asked to test for a smaller role in the film and said she wanted to play the mother, Rebecca. She was told, "You're too young, you're too pretty, you're too sexy, you're too this, you're too that," and I said, "I am an actress." In 2013, at age 88, Tyson won the Tony for Best Leading Actress in a play for the revival of Horton Foote's The Trip to Bountiful. In the 1974 television drama, The Autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman, based on a novel by Ernest J. Gaines, Tyson is seen aging from a young woman in slavery to a 110-year-old who campaigned for the civil rights movement in the 1960s. In the touching climax, she laboriously walks up to a whites-only water fountain and takes a drink as white officers look on. Quote, "It's important that they see and hear history from Miss Jane's point of view," Tyson told the New York Times, "and I think they will be more ready to accept it from her than from someone younger." At the Emmys, Pittman won multiple awards, including 2 honors for Tyson, Best Lead Actress in a Drama and Best Actress in a Special. Quote, "People ask me what I prefer doing, film, stage, or television. I say, I would have done Jane Pittman in the basement or in a storefront. It's the role that determines where I go," she told the Associated Press. Tyson made her movie debut in late 1950s with small roles in such films as Odds Against Tomorrow, The Last Angry Man, and The Comedians. She gained wider notice when a recurring role in the 1963 drama series East Side, West Side, which starred George C. Scott as a social worker. Tyson played his secretary, making her the first black woman to have a continuing role in a dramatic television series. In Roots, the 1977 miniseries that became one of the biggest events in TV history, she played Binta, mother of the protagonist Kunta Kinte, played by LeVar Burton. She won a Supporting Actress Emmy in 1994 for Oldest Living Confederate Widow Tells All. She was nominated for Emmys several other times, including for Roots, King, The Marva Collins Story, Sweet Justice, and A Lesson Before Dying. Tyson's parents moved from the island of Nevis in the Caribbean to New York, where Cicely was born in 1924, the youngest of 3 children. When she graduated from high school, She found work as a secretary at the Red Cross. Her striking looks prompted friends to advise her to take up modeling, and that led to acting school. Tyson was married once to jazz great Miles Davis. The wedding was held in 1981 at Bill Cosby's house in Massachusetts, attended by show business notables. They divorced in 1988. Tyson was never hard to spot. She tried to say no to wearing a terrifically large hat to Aretha Franklin's 2018 funeral, only to be overruled by her designer. The hat would become a viral highlight. She came around telling the AP she thought of the hat as an homage to Franklin's appearance at Obama's inauguration. In the Metro Briefs column, Janesville lists top seniors. Janesville. The Janesville Consolidated School District has announced its top graduating seniors of 2021. Brady Beener, Mackenzie Benjen, Justin Berry, Jake Browich, Emma Birch, Logan Busman, Daniel Butler, Karis Cameron, Austin Campanella, Chloe Carlson, Joey Carlson, Xander Cuppers, Jordan Danielson, Paige Feldman, Jacelyn Fensel, Mara Fitzgerald, Callie Frush, Gabriella Gergen, Christian Heiser, Naomi Hovenga, Haley Jensenius, Chloe Keene, Justin Cobb, Kyler Krieger, Carson Parasau, Isabella Reintz, and John Seedorf. Applications sought for art scholarship, Waterloo. If you plan to pursue a degree in visual arts, apply for Raymond T. Forsberg and Marilyn S. Hurley Memorial Scholarship, brought to you by the Waterloo Center for the Arts. Applicants for the $1,000 scholarship must be a graduating senior attending a high school within a 35-mile radius. The deadline to apply is 5 p.m. April 16th. Due to COVID-19, all items must be submitted digitally to angi.reid@waterloo-ia.org. State of Lou extends format, Waterloo. For more than 20 years, Taste of Lou has allowed participants to celebrate the diverse dining in downtown Waterloo in one evening. This year, you have an entire month to visit participating locations and try their featured dish. Visit the 12 participating restaurants anytime during the month of February to enjoy exclusive specials, new food dishes, and prizes. Taste of Lou has been planned to accommodate everyone's safety. All featured menu items can be ordered to go for those who are not comfortable dining in. Download the free digital pass to find out where to purchase the specialty dishes and get a $5 digital raffle ticket for a weekly drawing and a chance to win gift cards, t-shirts, and more. Enter as often as you'd like. More information about Taste of Lou is available at the Main Street Waterloo website. Ag classes offered at Independence. This spring, continuing instruction courses at the Buchanan County Extension and Outreach Office will begin February 10th with a 9 a.m. showing of the commercial ag, weed, insect, and plant disease management instruction. For those registered by February 3rd, the cost is $35. After February 3rd, the cost is $45. To register, call the Extension office at 319-334-7161. Waterloo presents British Ensemble, Waverly. Voces 8, a British vocal ensemble, will offer a live digital concert during the annual Wartburg College Meister Singer Honor Choir Festival on Saturday. The concert, which will be available online and is open to the public, will begin at 2:30 p.m. at https://livestream.com/WartburgNightVision/VOCES8. Voces 8 performs an extensive repertoire in a cappella concerts and in collaboration with leading orchestras, conductors, and soloists. The ensemble, which formed 15 years ago, is passionate about music education and is the flagship ensemble of the Voces 8 Foundation, which reaches up to 40,000 people each year through workshops and master classes. On the sports page, in prep wrestling, Hogan finds the right time. This story is filed by Jim Nelson and begins with a photograph with the caption, "Don Bosco's Gable Fox left hugs head coach Tom Hogan." Don Bosco wrestling coach to step down at end of season, Gilbertville. Tom Hogan forgot briefly that Gilbertville is one tight community. He also forgot, no matter how little or big the news is, it will travel at lightning fast speed within the city limits. It still took him by surprise when the first congratulatory texts started pouring in. Thursday afternoon, after Class 1A's top-ranked Dons completed practice, Hogan, a 1988 state champion for Don Bosco, announced he was retiring as the Dons' head wrestling coach at the end of this season. Quote, "I told our coaches last night," Hogan said. "I was debating to tell the kids now or wait to the end of the season. Then people started texting me, and I wanted to be the one to tell our athletes." Quote, "I didn't want to be the news. I wanted it to be about the kids and our focus on what we need to do before next Saturday, the sectionals." Hogan retires after 22 years on the Don Bosco wrestling staff. He was an assistant under legendary Dan Massach for a season and then spent 11 seasons as an assistant under Tom Kettman before taking over in 2011 and 2012. In his 10 seasons, the Dons have compiled a 222-48 mark and have won three traditional titles, 2012, 2019, 2020, and two dual championships in 2018 and 2019. Don Bosco also finished second in traditional twice in 2017 and 2018, and three times in state duels, 2014, 2017, and 2020. Hogan has coached 72 state qualifiers, 48 place winners, four state champions, Mark Weber, individual runner-ups. Quote, "I've been thinking about it for a little while," Hogan said. "It probably first crossed my mind last year. I talked to my family, Mill Boy, retired Wartburg College wrestling coach, Jim Miller, and several other people. Quote, "No time is a good time, but I thought we're going to have a real good team coming back next year, and I kind of want to leave with the cupboard full for whomever is going to take over for me. I stepped into a pretty healthy program, and it is still pretty healthy. When you can keep a program healthy for as long as we have, you feel good about it, and it helps make it feel like the right time." Hogan acknowledges he has several strong candidates to replace him already on his staff, and that he will be a resource for whomever the next coach will be, saying he hasn't given much thought to how much or if he will help out in the room next season. Hogan, who recently turned 50, will remain as the Don Bosco's athletic director and will also continue to teach health and physical education. The 1993 Wartburg College national champion said he has no big plans with his extra time, will accept maybe a few more hours sitting in the deer stand next winter. He thanked his family, brothers Mike, Dan, and Pat, his sister Kathy, and mom, Gert, for all their support, in addition to his wife, Tina, sons Jake and Charlie, and daughter Lexi. Quote, "I love what I do here, and I love the guys on this team," Hogan said. Quote, "It's just time to let somebody else take the reins and run with it. I can't complain. I was very blessed with the kids here and the assistant coaches I have had. The support of my family, you can't do this without that. They suffer and celebrate everything with you. My family, Mom, she used to flip the coin before our matches against Union when Pat was the head coach there. It's been a family affair for a long time, with my brothers who wrestled before me and my sister who was a wrestling cheerleader. And I think this is a special community in Gilbertville. The fans are a huge part of it, and the support you get, not just wrestling. I've appreciated what they have done and the support they have given over the years." In college volleyball, UNI learning on the fly. Panthers get rematch with Drake tonight at the McLeod Center, filed by Jim Nelson. Cedar Falls. The Northern Iowa volleyball team used its one and only free pass card last week. That card is now in the discard pile. The We Are Young card is no longer in play, according to head coach Bobby Peterson. Quote, I've said it too much, Peterson said. Are we young? That is true. But we are not going to use that as an excuse. After a 0-3 start to its season last week, Drake, Nebraska, Omaha, and Creighton, Peterson was first thankful for the opportunity to play. Secondly, there were many things Peterson and her staff identified that needed to be addressed prior to the UNI hosting a rematch with Drake tonight at the McLeod Center in a 6 p.m. start. In the days leading up, however, the Panthers' big challenge is not to get caught up in trying to fix everything at once. Quote, I think the challenging part is not to get overwhelmed with all the things you want to change and get a little bit better at it and just really be able to focus in. We just tried to pick a couple of things that we felt were most important to try to work and improve on. With 12 freshmen or sophomores on her roster and just 3 upperclassmen, Peterson knew there would be some early bumps in the road. Adding to that challenge is 14 months of playing against themselves. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Friday, January 29th. I'm your reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And you may wish to stay tuned to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, which follows shortly. And again, thank you for listening today.